Thank you, Betsy. Okay. I should acknowledge Rachel Riley of my staff, who helped put this together and works a lot on this issue for us. So, as Chris mentioned, my office at HUD, we do a lot to promote the holistic Healthy Homes concept, go into a home, assess for multiple hazards, and then intervene. Most of our money goes for lead hazard control, and we're trying to push it through those grants, but to the extent we can. But we also help to promote certain individual issues that we think are important, this being one, working with our program offices at HUD in particular, also integrated pest management. I'd like to shout out for that as well. Two very important topics on issues concerning indoor environmental quality. Let's see. Make sure I finish on time. Please tackle me if I go over. The title, I think, suggested I was going to focus on best practices. A little less. Don't have quite as much of that as I hoped to when I submitted this abstract, but I think I'm hoping that the other information you'll be interested in, and I'll explain why I don't have as much as, but these are some of the things I want to touch on today. A little bit about the history of our Smoke-Free Housing Initiative. It started with a session at a National Healthy Homes Conference in Baltimore in 2008. Jim Bergman from Michigan, Ann Arbor, who's been pushing this issue, especially within Michigan, for a long time. Smoke-Free Environments Law Project is the name of the initiative he works on. So Jim had a presentation, I gave a presentation on this, and then we took the presentation, my office, and then we met with others at HUD and the other program offices, in particular public housing, and it worked. We were surprised. There was a lot of arguments within it promoting the reasons for doing this, and you know, also within HUD, our current strategic plan for the department, one of the goals is to improve quality of life of residents of subsidized housing, and that includes health. So the timing was right. So this led to two notices being published, first by our Office of Public Housing. These are official administrative notices encouraging program participants to adopt smoke-free policies. So public housing, and also our subsidized multifamily housing. So those are that's the privately owned housing stock that HUD subsidizes. It's really taken off a little bit more in public housing. We have less knowledge on how well this is being implemented, or to what extent in the multifamily sector. So a lot of you know this information. I'll be quick. Why smoke-free housing? Secondhand smoke, known human carcinogen. U.S. Surgeon General in 2006 concluded there's no risk-free level of exposure to secondhand smoke. It migrates between units in a multifamily building. We know that. It's a leading cause of fire deaths. It increases the cost at unit turnover significantly. Of course, there's burn marks. There's residue on walls. They need cleaning, extra coats of paint. So there's a personal interest for housers to adopt this because it reduces costs. And they can reduce insurance costs because of the fire, reduce fire risk. So lots of reasons. And, you know, people, well, we'll get into it. People think, misunderstanding that I think that people have a right to smoke in their apartments, and it's just not the case. Some property owners have thought that. There's been misunderstandings about the legal aspects of doing this. I like to compare it to drinking water. If you're out in a rural area and your neighbor works on his or her car and dumps oil in the ground, that contaminates your well water. No, that's not right. That's illegal. Air is just a different medium. Your neighbor shouldn't be able to contaminate the air that you breathe, right? So anyways, I could go on. So evidence for secondhand smoke migrating. There's been research showing this, some of it here in Boston. And ASHRAE 2010, the engineers involved in heating and air conditioning, concluded that the only means for effectively eliminating the risks from secondhand smoke in a multifamily building is to prohibit smoking. This is kind of elegant research, inexpensive, uses NHANES data. Researchers looked at, they hypothesized that in households of non-smoking households, that children would have more cotinine, so a biomarker of nicotine, if they lived in multifamily houses. And sure enough, that's what they find. So the more physical communication between your housing unit and the neighbors, the more cotinine in the children. So the lower left is detached housing, single family. Middle bar is maybe row houses where you have attached walls. And then the highest bar is apartments we have. So it's a great visual on how secondhand smoke travels between housing units. So this is just a cost-benefit analysis that CDC completed, published last year, looking at what would be the monetary benefits of prohibiting smoking in all subsidized housing. So 7 million units of federally subsidized housing. This was mentioned this morning. There was an 8:30 session on smoke-free housing. If you didn't make it to that, you could get the PowerPoint. So it was a good session. Public housing, about 2.1 million residents in public housing. The smoking issue, of course, low SES, higher the smoking rate. 21% general public, 33%, and this is from National Health Interview Survey data, people who indicated that they received housing assistance, 33%. And it's not all federal assistance, so the numbers are a little bit inflated, but it's not going to affect this, I don't, about 33%. Differs by location. I heard Boston a few weeks ago, prevalence for Boston public housing residents, that was about 19%. So it, of course, you can't generalize to specific localities. So these were the cost savings for all housing, $521 million annual cost savings, mostly from health improvements. This doesn't include smokers who reduce their smoking. And there's been at least one study showing that when this is implemented, it's harder for smokers to smoke because they don't smoke as much. More would likely quit as well. They also looked at just for public housing, it was about $154 million, I believe, savings for public housing. So these monetizing these benefits is very important with the current budget climate, as you all know. Chris presented and Ruth Ann cost benefit data. The more we can get of this, the better. HUD notices, I mentioned these. We've been pleased to hear that they were influential and they pushed some housing providers to actually adopt these policies. You never know, you put out these kind of things, these notices, and you really, it's hard to judge the impact. Some common themes in the notice. I'm not going to read every one of these, but the benefits of smoke-free housing, clarifying there's no constitutional right to smoke, no legal right to smoke. We mentioned that if you have multiple buildings, the idea of starting with a subset of buildings, make those smoke-free, if that's easier, more palatable. And then the importance of partnering, providing smoking cessation services as well. We published what we called smoke-free housing toolkits. They were finished a couple of years ago. One for housers, managers, owners of housing. One for residents. Residents got a little bit watered down. I think they, you know, these things have to go through a lot of review, and they didn't want us to radicalize the residents, I guess. Just a little aside from a public health advocate here. But there's plenty of other good information out there from nonprofit organizations. But we did physically send these out to over 2,000 executive directors of housing authorities. So, you know, you can send links through emails, et cetera. I don't know the impact of that, but getting something in the mail these days, I think, still has more of an impact than just an email. So this is the landlord toolkit, some of the elements. I think we have a booth, 600 series. Marty, do you remember the number?
629.
Okay, thank you. Marty Nees, my office. He heads up the field staff division out of Boston and D.C. He commutes. Anyway, so stop by. I think we have some of these left if you're interested. So planning and implementation steps, this gets at a little bit more at best practices. Resident communication, can't emphasize that too much. As you're developing a policy, all the stages of implementation, that's what we keep hearing. Give them advance, plenty of advance notice. Make them your allies. Deliver a questionnaire to the residents. That often helps, because 100% that I've seen, more than 50% want it. Even a considerable number of smokers are supportive. It's surprising. Plan for cessation, partnering, of course, lease addendum. Get that, you know, be very clear on the benefits to them, why you're doing it. It's not punitive. You're not targeting smokers. You're targeting the act of smoking. Clear signage, and then a plan for enforcement, a stepwise plan, like you enforce any other requirement. So I wanted to mention this. We put out a Federal Register notice soliciting comments on the initiative, looking for this is where I wanted to get more of the best practices. We're still going through the information, so a bit less than I had hoped. Most comments were supportive, very supportive. We've got 116 responses. Policies can be consistent with tenants' rights. This was an interesting one from a tribal housing authority, Cook County Inlet in Alaska. So it's a good, really widespread geographic adoption of these policies. A little less so in the South and tobacco states, no big surprise. But it's encouraging to see it in tribal housing as well. Resident support, cost savings, no drop in housing applications. That's one concern about some housers, that, well, people are going to move out. It's the opposite, I believe. I think more people are looking for smoke-free housing. And then lower property insurance. Misconceptions. Tenants have a right to smoke. What's HUD doing? Most residents oppose policies. That's not right. We lack the authority to do it. Residents will be fast-tracked to eviction. Well, if it's abused, there's nothing we can do about that, but we certainly hope that's not the case. And we'll deny housing. People will deny housing to smokers. That's not the case either. Let's see. Consensus elements, so again, getting a little bit more at best practices. Sufficient notification. So 8 months, I guess, was the average. I think a year, definitely better. Boston Housing Authority implemented smoke-free in September 2012. I think they had a year of notice before they did it. Clearly explain the reasons for doing it. I mentioned that. Get into the details. Where can you smoke? Okay, a couple of minutes. Stepwise enforcement policy. Additional suggestions, innovations, tenants as peer counselors, air testing to help monitor, help enforce. There's a few organizations that are doing some of these things, and then active enforcement. There was also a survey of the National Association of Housing and Redevelopment Officials. About 85% of housing authorities are members. They had an intern who helped develop a survey, and they implemented it this past August. They got 616 responses, so they think about 30%, 25-30%. And I'm going to go through these quickly. They talk about the policy coverage, 30% grandfathering. So that could be that if it's just you have existing leases, you can't change those until lease renewal. So they have to be grandfathered. What we don't like to see is this indefinite grandfathering of current smokers, because that you wouldn't have smoke-free properties for a long time until all of them moved out. Advance notice to residents. And then enforcement is difficult. Yeah, about 30-50% agreed, but not as many as we expect. Reasons for adopting: self-interest, like I said, reduce costs. But they also said improving IAQ, reducing fire risk. Major obstacles, again, enforcement, resident complaints. 65% of 252, I'm sorry, who responded, interested in finding out more. So that was good to see. Momentum, we're seeing this is definitely growing. Marty's group did kind of an informal survey in the field. We think we're up to 422 housing authorities adopting this, covering about 150,000 units. I think initially that 270 figure is high. I think it was more like 200. So it's really growing, which is great to see. Future activities, next generation of guidance we want to put out that's more best practices, more talking about what case studies, I guess. I think housers learn best from each other, and we want to capture that and put it out there. Betsy's group, Cadmus, is one of the contractors who's working on this. We want to have a national meeting in 2014 or 15 on smoke-free multifamily housing. Working with our partners, they're very excited about this, HHS, CDC. We've had great working relationship with them. And then get a better system in place for tracking, we're hoping. Okay, thank you very much.